You want to take the right road that takes you to the right place, but it's awfully hard to tell sometimes when it's God speaking and when it's not. Am I talking myself into believing it's God when, in fact, that might just be the voice of a parent whose approval I still desire? Is that God speaking to me through that song on the radio or the sign on the highway or the stranger in the elevator?
That's the Reverend Dr. Stephen Cook with a powerful message entitled On Beyond. I'm Peter Wallace, and this is Day One.
Welcome to Day One, the weekly program that brings you outstanding preachers from America's mainline Protestant churches, sharing insight and inspiration from God's Word for your life. Now to introduce this week's preacher, here's our host, Peter Wallace.
Thanks, Sherry. We're delighted to welcome back to Day One the Reverend Dr. Stephen Cook, Senior Pastor of Second Baptist Church in Memphis, Tennessee. Stephen is a graduate of Wake Forest University. He earned his Master of Divinity from Baptist Theological Seminary of Richmond, Virginia, and a Master of Theology degree in Pastoral Theology and Counseling from Bright Divinity School at Texas Christian University. He also earned a Doctor of Ministry degree from Columbia Theological Seminary. Before coming to Second Baptist in November of 2010, he served churches in North Carolina, Georgia, and Virginia. Stephen, thanks for being with us again.
I'm glad to be here.
Last week, you told us about some of the wonderful ministries of Second Baptist Church in Memphis. As senior pastor, I understand your emphasis has been on spiritual formation and ministry engagement in the lives of members. How do you work to achieve fulfilling your calling there?
One of the things that I feel so fortunate about at Second Baptist is that we have a ministry staff that shares a vision for how we can work collaboratively and across generations. And so we have, in the course of the time that I've been there, we have restructured our staff in such a way that we all participate in every area of the congregation's life across every age group. And it has been wonderfully fun to see the relationships that have deepened and the ways that we have grown together as we have tried to move away from this sense of being separated into different compartments for who does what, and where we all share the load and the responsibilities for engaging people so that they grow in their spiritual formation, that they grow in their love of God and of God's people. And the deeper we go in spiritual formation, the more we are driven to engage the world around us. And the more we engage the world around us, the more we recognize our need for and our thirst for God's presence in our lives. And so the circle of formation, engagement, where each fuels the other, has just been terrific to experience alongside my colleagues.
You have taught as an adjunct instructor at Memphis Theological Seminary. What's your impression of the students preparing for the ministry now?
One of the things that is unique about Memphis Theological Seminary is the broad spectrum of ages that are represented among the students there. There have been classes that I have facilitated where I have been the youngest person in the room, and I am struck by and deeply inspired by people who in their 50s and 60s who perhaps have been serving small congregations, rural congregations, are coming and receiving formal theological education, who are hungry for those kinds of formal learning opportunities. And I've also been impressed by the racial and ethnic diversity that makes up the student body at Memphis Theological Seminary. We live in as diverse a society as we have known before, and it's exciting to see how that's been reflected in the student body at the seminary there.
You earned your Doctor of Ministry degree from Columbia Theological Seminary. What did your project focus on?
The project was focused on making the transition from the world of the classroom into the world of the congregation. One of the things that I learned in the research I did was that there are really three key things that ministers need to thrive in their first ministry settings and beyond. One of those is to have a strong network of peer support. Another of those is to have good, solid mentor support.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third piece is to have strong congregational support. Often what I found in the ministers whose stories they were letting me in on, what I found is that the ministers had strong peer support, strong mentor support, but the congregations were frequently unaware of the dynamics that go into transitioning from this world of the classroom into the world of the congregation. And so if churches who call First Call ministers aren't aware of the unique and wonderful opportunities that exist, then that can often lead to shortened tenures and misunderstandings. Mm-hmm. And so I really wanted to lift up the richness and the goodness of congregations and ministers partnering together.
Mm-hmm.
Ministers, we don't know what we don't know when we first start out. Congregations can be wonderful places for us to learn. And in the same way, the ministers who are coming straight from seminary have an energy and a passion and an enthusiasm that sometimes more seasoned ministers don't bring to congregations when they first come. And so it's an exciting time and a rich opportunity for churches and ministers to work together.
Mm. And there's a great deal of transition in ministry these days, and a number of new models are emerging for churches and their leaders. Where do you think the ministry, the church itself, is heading?
I think we're in an era where churches are finding that there is space for creativity.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned earlier that at Second Baptist Church in Memphis, we have reconfigured our ministry staff.
Mm-hmm.
We've done that in part because of our sense of identity that this is how God is leading us forward. And we've also done it as a product of pragmatism. We recognize that we can no longer have the days where we hire ministers to do all of the work of the church, that it's up to the people, that we work together, that we as staff members are there to equip the people to be able to live and to serve and to carry on the work of the church in the world. So I find that this is an era where we may have less specialization in ministry and greater opportunity for us to equip and empower people to go and to be the church in the world that we inhabit.
Mm-hmm. I understand you enjoy traveling with your wife, Amy, and two young sons, and you have a goal to visit all 50 states. Why did you set that goal, and how's it coming?
I set the goal because it's a great benchmark, and I just love the idea of being able to see all the different parts of this country. There's so much richness and diversity that exists within our country. So far, I think I am at 38 states. Amy is beating me right now, and so we have to find a way to correct that. But I believe at last count, I was at 38.
Pretty good. Last Sunday, you started us off in Lent, explaining that it is a wilderness season, a time for prayer and spiritual discipline, of thoughtful reflection and intentional remembrance as we seek to give our lives to God more fully. And today, for the second Sunday in Lent, your sermon draws from Genesis chapter 12. You'll be reading it in a few minutes, but give us the context of this passage about the journeys of Abraham.
Well, this is the part of the story where really the Hebrew people's story begins.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not insignificant that it begins with an uprooting and a calling to go from where you've been and the place where you've been settled and the life that has been fairly good, not perfect by any means, but fairly good. But in order to give birth to a nation, in order to give birth to a new people, God calls Abraham and Sarah and their family to get up and to go beyond where they have been, comfortable and at home, and into something that God is going to reveal to them and to generations that come after.
Well, Stephen, we look forward to learning more about this in your sermon today, On Beyond. Thanks again for being with us.
I'm delighted to be here.
Thank you.
indulge me, if you will, before I read from the good book as I read from another book. Our church sponsors an annual children's camp each summer. 2 years ago, our theme was The Gospel According to Dr. Seuss. As the camp pastor, I had the privilege of reading up on some of those classic stories from the pen of the great Theodore Seuss Geisel. It was to prepare for our nightly worship services at camp. So before I read from the Bible story today, I want to read a bit, just a small bit, from this piece Dr. Seuss first penned more than 60 years ago called On Beyond Zebra. Said Conrad Cornelius O'Donald Odell, my very young friend who is learning to spell. The A is for ape, the B is for bear, the C is for camel, the H is for hare. The M is for mouse, and the R is for rat. I know all the 26 letters like that. Through to Z is for zebra, I know them all well, said Conrad Cornelius O'Donald Odell. So now I know everything anyone knows, from beginning to end, from the start to the close, because Z is as far as the alphabet goes. Then he almost fell flat on his face on the floor when I picked up the chalk and drew one letter more, a letter he never had dreamed of before, and I said, you can stop if you want with the Z, because most people stop with the Z, but not me. In the places I go, there are things that I see that I never could spell if I stopped with the Z. I'm telling you this 'cause you're one of my friends. My alphabet starts where your alphabet ends. My alphabet starts where your alphabet ends, says that fellow teaching Conrad Cornelius O'Donald Odell to spell. Through the rest of the book, he takes him on an imaginative journey of new letters the young lad never knew existed. He carries him way beyond the boundaries of the 26-letter English alphabet. At one point, the boundary-breaking teacher practically shouts, "So on beyond Z, it's high time you were shown that you really don't know all there is to be known." That truth reminding us that all we think we know isn't all there is to be known, is a clear echo of an older, even more significant story to hear and to hold. Today we hear from the lectionary text from Genesis 12, plus a few verses on beyond that. Now the Lord said to Abram, "Go from your country, and your kindred, and your father's house, to the land that I will show you. I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you, and make your name great, so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." So Abram went, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Abram took his wife Sarai and his brother's son Lot, and all the possessions that they had gathered, and the persons whom they had acquired in Haran, and they set forth to go to the land of Canaan. When they had come to the land of Canaan, Abram passed through the land to go to the place at Shechem, to the oak of Moreh. At that time the Canaanites were in the land. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your offspring I will give this land." So he built there an altar to the Lord, who had appeared to him. From there he moved on to the hill country on the east of Bethel and pitched his tent, with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east, and there he built an altar to the Lord and invoked the name of the Lord. And Abram journeyed on by stages toward the Negev. At 75 years old, Abraham isn't planning on going anywhere. At this stage of the game, he has a lot of life to look at in the rearview mirror. There are places he has been, jobs he has done, good things he has accomplished. At 75, conventional wisdom says there aren't that many moves left to make. Maybe downsizing to a one-story, two-bedroom with wider doorways and an option to move over to assisted living when the time comes. But truth be told, at the start of his story in Genesis 12, he has no plans of going anywhere beyond where he already is. God, though, God has other plans. Abraham might not be planning on going anywhere beyond where he already is, but he goes on anyway. He may not have expected to put the house on the market, to haul all the boxes down from the attic, clean up and clear out, but he does. That is precisely what he does. And why? Well, the answer to that is as predictable as that there are always fewer socks that come home from summer camp than what go in the suitcase. Why does Abraham go? Because God says so. Now, that's about as plain vanilla church speak as it comes, I know. If God says do this, then you do that. As long as I have been in church, I have been hearing that lesson taught over and over and over again. God says go, then you go. Only the problem for me, and maybe you find this too, is that it isn't always easy to know when it's God doing the talking. Am I the only one? You want to make the best decision. You want to take the right road that takes you to the right place, but it's awfully hard to tell sometimes when it's God speaking and when it's not. Am I talking myself into believing it's God when, in fact, that might just be the voice of a parent whose approval I still desire? Is that God speaking to me through that song on the radio or the sign on the highway or the stranger in the elevator? Or is it just another song, another sign, and another random person that I've bumped into? It's so hard to know which voice is God's and which isn't. I wonder if Abraham worried his ears were playing tricks on him. Do you think maybe he sat on that summons from God to go on beyond the life and land and home he had known for a while before he told his wife, Sarah? Can't you see them sitting down to dinner one evening? There they are at the table that they've had in their dining room since her grandmother died 40 years ago. Sarah's just asked if Abraham wouldn't mind putting a little more tea in her glass when he says, "I've got some news for you, dear. We're moving. I know it sounds a little odd, but God called, said this is what we need to do." Sarah sits there stunned. While he's got her attention, Abraham goes ahead and throws in the next part, too. "And by the way, God also told me that somewhere along the way we really are going to get pregnant. So, turns out we just need to keep practicing." I suspect Abraham had to think long and hard about how to have that talk with Sarah. This is one of those places I wish the Bible would tell us a little more. And tell us how long it was between God calling and that old couple talking and then the whole entourage moving. I wish we knew how long it was before they wrapped up the dishes and loaded up the lamps and took down the pictures and watched the life they had known fade into the shadows as the overloaded U-Haul slowly rolled down the block. I wish we knew. But the Bible doesn't bother to say. What the Bible does tell us, though, is Abraham and Sarah, they went. They went on beyond where they'd been. They went on beyond what they'd known because somewhere, somehow, they figured out the truth that all they knew isn't all there is to know. Sure, they could have played it safe. They could have stayed put. Goodness knows anyone who has ever moved can attest to the fact that it's just really not all that much fun. But just the same, anyone who has ever set out to know God, to love God with heart, soul, mind, with all your being, you know, we know, that ours is not a God content with the same old, same old. Ours is a God who is discontent with all the boundaries and borders we go around trying to erect in an effort to maintain something like order, something like control, something like a facade that says we have got it all in good shape. God comes calling and God says something akin to what the good Dr. Seuss said. "Most people stop at the Z, but not me." That's the way it goes with this God of ours who is forever calling and calling us all to keep going on beyond. Go on beyond all the truth you think you know and discover more. Go on beyond all the insights you think you have and find more. Go on beyond the friendships and relationships you've got now and discover there are more to be had, even in places with and among people you might never have dreamed of ever being with and among. Go on beyond your ideas of who's in and who's out, who fits and who doesn't. Go on beyond your comfort zone. Go on, go on, go on. Go on beyond, God says, over and over again. Through the pages of the Bible and across the arc of time, God is forever saying, go on beyond. Go through the Bible and see if you can find somewhere that it says, go on over to the outer edge of what makes you comfortable, but not an inch further. Go on and give the least you can give and feel okay about it, but not a single bit more. Go on and share enough to say that you've done something, but don't go beyond that. You know. Goodness knows you know. If that's the kind of message we're after, if that's the kind of security we're seeking, if that's the kind of God we're wanting, that's not going to get found in our Bibles. Ours is a God who wants it all, you know. Just ask Abraham about that when he takes his one beloved son up that fateful mountain where a sacrifice almost happens. In the places I go, there are things that I see that I never could spell if I stopped with the Z. Doesn't that ring with something like gospel truth? Gospel truth that tells us ours is a God who is forever and always calling us on beyond where we are to where we might yet be, on beyond life as it's lived now to life as it might yet be. On beyond in pursuit of a holy life, wholly devoted to the one who patiently, persistently is leading us forward and on beyond. Let us pray. God who calls us on beyond our comfort zones and the boundaries we build in our living, lead us by faith to trust your sense of direction and to remember that you are abiding with us now and always. Amen.
Our speaker today was the Reverend Dr. Stephen H. Cook, Senior Pastor of Second Baptist Church in Memphis, Tennessee. For a free transcript of his message for the second Sunday in Lent, entitled On Beyond, call us toll-free at 1-888-411-DAY1. That's 888-411-3291. Or write to us at Day 1, 2715 Peachtree Road, Atlanta, Georgia 30305. Remember, Day One depends on the financial gifts of faithful listeners like you. Please consider supporting our ministry with a generous donation. We appreciate it. I'm Sherry Miller. Next week, we're pleased to welcome the Reverend Dr. Brian Coulter, Senior Pastor of First Presbyterian Church in Aiken, South Carolina. His sermon for the third Sunday of Lent is entitled, It Was About Noon. You won't want to miss it. Now, Stephen Cook offers some final reflections on today's sermon with our host, Peter Wallace.
Stephen, you read a bit from the Gospel of Dr. Seuss in your sermon from On Beyond Zebra, which urges us to surpass the boundaries of the 26-letter English alphabet. That may sound very familiar to us who have heard God's call to Abraham to go beyond the routine, the safe, and the expected, toward the great promise of God. Abraham, after all, was aging and he likely had settled down well, but God says, go and you go. You said the only problem for you, and I can identify, is that it isn't always easy to know when it's God who's doing the talking. So here's a big question. How can we clarify that?
That is a big question. Let me tell you about my own experience of discerning the call for my family and me to move to Memphis. At the time when we were in conversation with the pastor search committee, we were living in a community in Virginia that had been home for us. We had a baby that was on the way, and our firstborn son was perfectly happy where we were. And yet we sensed there was a restlessness, and we sensed that it might be time for us to move. But to move as far away as Memphis, as far away from our families who were in North Carolina, that felt like a very big step. Through the whole process, I kept telling the pastor search committee that I just needed to see a burning bush, that I needed to have that clarity and that sort of knowledge that this was really real. And I remember in the last face-to-face conversation that I had with the committee before we said yes, I told them that I could see smoke, but that I wasn't sure that it was really a burning bush. The next morning, the chair of the committee picked me up, and he was going to be taking me back to the airport to go home. And we went to a park in Memphis, and we sat down at a picnic table. And he told me that he had stayed up all night the night before, and that he had gone through the whole Bible, and that so far as he could tell, there was but one person who had ever seen a burning bush. But then, and he started with Abraham and went all the way through Old and New Testaments, finding those stories of people who stepped out by faith. He closed the argument by pointing to Peter. When Peter went to step out of the boat to join Jesus walking on the water. And what this gentleman said to me is, I can't promise you that you will find Jesus, but I can promise you that if you will step out in faith, then you will find people here who are willing to be as Christ to you and to lift you up when you are sinking and to help walk alongside of you if you will come and serve alongside of us. And lo and behold, on that July day in Memphis, Tennessee, in Audubon Park, there was a bush that was burning.
And God is forever calling us all to keep going on beyond the truth we think we know, the places we've never dreamed of being, the opportunities to minister we never considered, you said. But that is scary. How do we take that first step?
What I have found is that there is a unique kind of joy that commingles with the fear of stepping forward. But when we know that this is the right step to take, that this is the right move for us to make, then the joy always outpaces the fear. The joy of knowing that this is what I'm called to do, and this is where God is going with me.
Stephen, what's one thing from your sermon that you hope our listeners will keep in mind this week?
I hope that we will remember that there is no place we are called to go that God isn't already there.
Stephen Cook, thank you for being with us.
I'm so happy to be here.
Day One is the voice of America's mainline Protestant churches. Visit us online at dayone.org. Our program is recorded and edited by Donald Jones and produced by Peter Wallace. Thank you for joining us. I'm Sherry Miller, wishing you all God's blessings on Day One and forever.